Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. All so that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
All right, this is the case that refuses to go quietly into the night. We all know Brian Laundry murdered Gabby Petito. But what about his parents? Not saying they murdered Gabby Petito, but were they just cold and detached, or did they actually break the law? A public opinion has already convicted them in the court of common sense, which is pretty easy to do. What about in a real court? Today, we're breaking down the legal plight of Chris and Roberta Laundry, what they did, what they didn't do, and whether they could still face criminal charges. Because let's be honest, if ignoring a frantic family looking for their missing daughter was illegal, they'd already be behind bars. But is there an actual legal case here? Eric Faddis, defense attorney, former prosecutor with us. So let's cut right to it. If the Laundries knew Gabby was dead while the entire county was searching for her, could that be enough to charge them with obstruction, aiding and abetting, or any sort of other crime? Or is this just a morally repugnant but legally defensible situation?
You know, people look at the situation, and I've seen the new Netflix documentary about it, and it appears kind of egregious. If they did know, gosh, tell the family, tell somebody so there can be some closure. That being said, does it rise to the level of criminal conduct? Usually you need some kind of affirmative interference with the investigation that would meet that threshold for being charged with a crime, and simply saying, hey, we don't have a lot of information, mum's the word, usually doesn't get you there.
I think what really shocked me about that whole documentary on Netflix right now was some of the footage where they went up to the porch of the Laundries while Gabby was missing, with a camera, with investigators knocking on the door, and all you got a response, but it was, we're not commenting on that, you need to talk to our attorney. And Brian is in the house, and they know he's in the house, and the vehicle is in their driveway, and Gabby is gone, and the other families are frantic. Was there no legal recourse or reason? I would think you'd have some sort of reason to go in and get Brian, get him into questioning of some sort. Was this a step that the authorities totally missed, or was there not legal standing at that moment in time, as shocking as it may be to the public, to do anything while the daughter is missing and he's back without her? That just seems to me like a window of time where something could have been done legally.
Completely understandable impression. I think it's an impression shared by most of the American public. A person's home under the law is like their castle. It has so many protections. And the police usually cannot force their way into a home unless there is probable cause to believe that a crime has occurred And probable cause at that juncture would have been a little bit shaky, that there was a missing person, there were suspicious circumstances. But was there probable cause to think that Brian killed her? I don't know if they had that at that juncture. You know, could they have tried to break into the house and said there's exigent circumstances, which is a warrant exception, because there could be a dead body in there or something like that? They didn't do that. And because of that, Brian Laundry can no longer be questioned because he's dead.
Could they have done that, though, I guess is the question. I mean, or would that, I mean, would that have been really kind of a stretch? As crazy as that sounds, would that legally have been a stretch to do?
It would have been a risk on behalf of law enforcement, because I don't know that they had any evidence that Gabby's body would have been inside. If they had evidence of that, and it wasn't inside is my understanding, if they had evidence of that, they could have used the exigent circumstances warrant exception to just break into the home regardless of the Landry's permission. Mm-hmm. But if they did that, took the risk, and a court decided they were wrong, that could have undone any future prosecution of Brian Landry. So it would have been a risky move.
Now, the Laundries are, you know, they get crucified because of their behavior, and I understand it. If I was Gabby's parent and I saw that, I probably would have broken into the house myself and found him. You know? But at that moment, I mean, it's hindsight. You know, what do? You're just trying to follow and hope things turn out, you know, the way they do. They also, I don't know if they knew at that moment in time of the road stop where the officers found Gabby and said she was the one that was, you know, the aggressor in the situation. Let's go to that, because that's another big piece of this. The officers involved, they still have jobs. In fact, one of them even got promoted after this. And the judge said, you know, in Utah, we have these laws that basically say that you can't prosecute the police. They have, you know, whatever it is, they're immune. That, all of that right there, the fact that the judge said, yeah, they may have acted, and I'm paraphrasing, you know, not to our standards of what they should have done for a domestic situation, but it is what it is. Are you satisfied with that as a response from the state, knowing what we know now?
Gosh, you know, if some other police action would have been taken during that first DV incident, that could have changed everything. Gabby could still be here. But, you know, hindsight is 20/20. And in looking at the body cam footage, Brian was saying one thing, Gabby is saying another. Now, Gabby did have some visible wounds to her. They weren't, you know, life-threatening or anything catastrophic. Brian had some visible marks with respect to some altercation. And really, both sides were kind of unclear as to exactly what happened, who did what first. And I think the police were just kind of confused and couldn't reach a conclusion there, let them both go.
The fact that they came to the conclusion that Gabby was the aggressor, and I know people will say, well, you know, she admitted to hitting him with him. Okay, she did, sure. And he's playing it up like there's nothing going on. He's doing the whole, hey, bruh, you know, that sort of thing with the police. Again, it comes down to judgment, and I think some would say common sense. Even if Gabby is the aggressor, why is she being aggressive? Why is she fighting back? It's a battle she's not going to win if we're talking about physical altercations here. And the police should have looked at that and said, you know, even if she does and he fights back, he could hurt her. He could kill her. I mean, not to say that she couldn't too if she had like a weapon, but didn't appear to be that. It appeared to be more like some sort of an abuse situation. And if one's abusing the other, especially in a situation like that where one's like totally, nah, it's all good, nothing's fine, it's all good. I don't know. It's shocking to me to think that they just said, okay, you're going to go to the hotel and you're going to sleep in the van and go along your way and not intervene anymore. But are their hands really tied when both of them are saying, go along, go away. You know, we don't need to do anything here. We'll figure this out. Then, you know, one of them ends up dead. Both actually ended up dead. But, you know, did they follow the law? Did they follow what they needed to do? And this, unfortunately, is just how our system works, how our rules work. And in some cases, it works out to prevent this sort of thing. In some cases, it ends up enabling it. But they're following what they're supposed to do.
It is sad and unfortunately so terribly common in these domestic disputes for each side to be equivocal and to hedge and to be unclear and ultimately, you know, say, oh, gosh, Gabby's saying it was my fault, that kind of thing, when it might not have been. I think the officers let Brian off on essentially a self-defense thing. They thought Gabby was the initial and primary aggressor. But in self-defense, your response has to be proportionate to the threat. And you look at the wounds on Gabby, and I think there's at least one on her face, is, you know, punching or striking a young woman in the face hard enough to draw blood a proportionate response to something that didn't really amount to any real threat to Brian? I'm not sure it was.
Yeah, there's a lot of gray area in this, and there's a lot of looking at it. What did they know in that moment of the situation? It's easy for us to all look at everything in its entirety in the back end and go, well, of course, this is how you'd handle it. But a lot of things no one was conscious of at the moment of time while they were making the decisions that they were. Let's take a step back to them finding Brian's remains. Again, going back and forth on the laundries of if they should be punished or not, there's plenty of just abhorrent behavior there. They went camping after Brian returned, as Gabby is still missing. They come back. Brian goes camping and obviously doesn't return. And then there's a manhunt for him for a long time. And they have the resources of the community and investigators for, I believe it was like 30 some days looking for him. And eventually one day the laundries say, hey, I think we'll help in the search. They go out there and they find him in like 3 hours. They knew exactly where he was. One could go, oh, that's a mother's intuition, or that's God, or that's this. Or it's they knew where the hell he was. Why didn't they tell investigators where he was? You'd have to prove that they knew, which would be a hard feat to do. But come on. I mean, the wasted resources, all of that, and nothing criminally has been brought to the laundries for that reason, for wasting these resources at the very least. Is that a reasonable thing that should have been looked at or should have been considered for charging them with? Or again, is this another one where it's that gray area where, yeah, I mean, if you look at it, they probably knew where he was, but we can't really prove they knew where he was.
The evidence I've seen in the documentary and different reports, that kind of thing, certainly suggests that the laundries had more knowledge than they disclosed. Probably more knowledge about how Gabby died, probably more knowledge about the aftermath and where Brian was. That oftentimes you don't, there's no legal affirmative duty to cooperate with law enforcement and to say, oh yeah, I know where my son's body is. It's over here. It's, you know, stop wasting all your time and money over here. The parents don't legally have to do that. Should they have done that? Would have been the right move to do that? Perhaps. But I'm not sure that there is a legal requirement that would obligate them to do that.
There's a lot of would have, could have, should have in this, and everyone going as a parent, oh my God, I can't imagine myself being in that situation. And I can't imagine if I was the parents that I would not be sitting there trying to help and comfort the other family. But would you? I mean, it's hard to put yourself in that situation. Your son returns and, oh, by the way, I killed my girlfriend. Here's the van. It was an accident or just, you know, his anger out of control. What do you do? You know, everybody's going to have a different answer to that. Some are going to, you know, ride or die to the grave with their kids. Some will be like, well, you had this coming. Enjoy your time in prison. But everybody's a little bit different on that. Can the laundries get a pass here? Were they just simply following the advice of their attorney saying, shut up and don't say a word?
You know, what an ominous prospect that would be shocking to nearly any parent. And I think nearly any parent would be completely perplexed, would not know what to do. And so they would reach out to a professional for advice, for guidance, say, how in God's name are we going to handle this scenario? And it looks like that's what the laundries did with their attorney. And you know, the Laundries aren't under any obligation to help the state prosecute their son for murder. And I think a survivalistic mechanism would likely kick in for most folks. And they would say, you know, I wasn't there. I don't know exactly what happened. I love my son. I believe my son, whether it's true or not. And I'm going to protect that person. And it looks like that's what the Laundries did from the beginning until the very end.
It's a weird way to think about all of this, but I do wonder how much the Laundries were trying to shield themselves from any sort of litigation by, and again, this is just my conjecture, enabling their son to go out and kill himself. And I, that's how I feel it happened. I could be completely wrong, but I feel like they went on that camping trip. They knew how, they knew what happened. Again, my conjecture, they've never been convicted of anything, and realized, you know, if he lives, if he continues on and he gets arrested, we're going to be in some deep shit too at this point, because he can tell on us. He'll be under oath. They'll question him. They'll want to know what we knew and when. Are these parents that literally were like, oh, he'll go to the woods and he'll find himself and he'll come back? Or did they silently know, or did they already know, he's going to go to the woods and kill himself? And then no one's the wiser. No one can prove what we knew or what we didn't know, because he's gone and we're not going to say anything. And it's all just basically dies with him. I mean, it's a real twisted way of thinking of that, especially if you're a parent. But I do wonder, you know, did they know he was going off to his death, and at the same time breathe a sigh of relief going, well, that's the only person that can get us in trouble.
You know, what a dark dilemma to have to navigate as a parent. You know, is it better for my son and perhaps for me if my son goes and kills himself? Or should I try to keep my son alive, but then I might be in hot water legally? What a horrible situation to have to go through. You know, they at least have a motivation or perhaps some kind of incentive if the source of information that's incriminating against them goes away, that then that incriminating information goes away.
Yeah. It's a dark, dark thing to think of. I it's another moment I can't really wrap my head around very good for them to think that he wasn't going to go and kill himself in the woods. You know, what are you going to expect here? He likes to go hike. Yeah, everybody's looking at him as this murderer. They just haven't charged him quite yet. And, well, maybe the best thing to do is to just go end your life. I'm not saying they said that, but that's clearly what he thought. He thought, you know, rather than go through litigation, rather than have to be this pariah, this horrible guy that's going to be exposed in court, he thought his best out is just to kill himself, and then it'll be what it is today, this horrible tale. But one can't help wonder if the parents were, oh, there's an incentive here for us too, just considering how cold and callous they seem to be already. Again, my conjecture, they've never been charged with anything.
Oh, sure. And think about, you know, if your son was the target of this massive death investigation for this young girl, he's being constantly surveilled, or at least was supposed to be, by police in the aftermath. And then your son comes to you and says, hey, I'm going to go camping for a few days. You would probably say, what are you thinking? You are going to be locked down here. We are going to protect you as best we possibly can. But if you allow him to go camping, is there at least some semblance in your mind that he's going to go do something, likely kill himself? I think that thought would have to cross their mind when they heard what he wanted to go do during that phase of the investigation.
You would think. And what it is or what it isn't, maybe what's missing here, is them not saying stop or preventing him from going. We haven't heard anything of like, we tried to prevent him, but he just snuck out. No, it seems like they pretty much knew he was going to go camping or going for this little tyrant onto the into the woods. There's just so much bizarre behavior within that family that it's hard to fully understand and wrap your mind around. Coupled with a horrible situation on top of it, and you go, how much of this is just utterly poor decisions because of the trauma that they're all going through, and how much of this is just a pattern of utterly horrible decisions that they've made their entire lives, which ended up leading to a son like Brian Laundrie? Just too many questions.
The world of true crime never stops, and neither do we. Press subscribe now to get daily updates, in-depth analysis, and expert opinions from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.